if you're an entrepreneur, in my book, you're already doing philanthropy. Like, of course, it's great to always give more than that if you have surplus cash, of course. But I just think that sometimes people don't have that perspective. They think, oh, they're just making all this money and, you know, look at me, I'm not making that much money.
We each have our own gift to give, and yours is unique. What reality you want to create, it's your choice, always. No one can take that from you.
All right, everybody, this is Calvin Corelli. I'm here with my buddy Omar, Omar Zenham, who is, how do you pronounce your last name, Omar?
Yeah, exactly, Zenham.
Zenham,
yeah.
There you go. Omar is the founder, CEO of Webinar Ninja. We've connected through a coaching program called SaaS Academy with Dan Martell. Dan is freaking awesome. Do you like Dan?
Love Dan. Love Dan. Love Dan. I have a lot of time for Dan, yeah.
Yeah, Dan is fantastic. Dan is phenomenal. So grateful to Dan for connecting the two of us. And like I've met you through that forum several times. We also met in Nashville at another event. And you just always struck me as someone that had this sense of clarity, calmness, like inner power about you, which is. I wanted to go explore that because I bet you that probably wasn't always there. There's a story there. So that's what I want to dive into today. But to start, would you mind just telling people a little bit about who you are, what you do?
Sure. My name is Omar Zenholm. I'm the co-founder and CEO of a software company called Webinar Ninja, which is a webinar platform for people that want to run live events, recorded events, things like that. I also have a podcast called The $100 MBA Show. It's kind of brought me into the online world is that podcast, as well as the program called The $100 MBA, which is daily business lessons. I basically teach the basics of business so people could have the confidence to be able to grow their business on their own without going to business school. Beyond that, my parents are Egyptian. They migrated from Egypt to the States in the late 60s. So I grew up, you know, as with immigrant parents in the U.S., which I feel like informed a lot of my life. I probably didn't realize it until later in life, but, you know, growing up in that kind of environment where they've sacrificed so much to move to a better life, to move to a new country where they have to basically relearn everything, new language, new everything. My mom had to get her degree all over again because they didn't recognize her degree, her dietitian degree back in Egypt. So just growing up in that environment requires you to be grateful, requires you to, you know, not take things for granted. They reminded you all the time, like, hey, we didn't come here to waste time. You better get good grades. You better, you know, do your homework. You better, you know, don't get into trouble, all that kind of stuff. So that voice is still in my head every day. That kind of,
Where in America did you grow up?
I grew up in New York, Long Island, New York. A lot of Egyptian immigrants would come to the East Coast. Yeah. So it was just
an interesting
upbringing.
Yeah. It's interesting with the whole immigrant thing, right? Like, I guess I'm not even an immigrant. I'm technically a visitor, a temporary visitor here on a visa. But there is some like there seems to be like an energy around immigrants that like work harder, strive harder, more hungry, strive more, right? I have this idea that this is like we're getting off on a tangent here, but it's just so interesting to me that one of the purposes of a country is to create good people, right? Like to like with education and the culture and everything, like. And I'm just like, how is America doing on that, right? It's like. It seems like there's something where like immigrants bring something that kind of gets bred out of people in America. Is that just me?
I think that is definitely true to some degree. I think one of the things I grew up with that I think a lot of my maybe friends and classmates in school didn't have is perspective. I have a lot of perspective growing up. You know, I know what poverty looks like because, you know, I went back to Egypt for a visit when I was 7 years old and kids my age are begging on the street. And, you know, that's when you're exposed to that at a young age, you realize, wow, even if I don't have the latest sneakers, you know, at school, I'm pretty good. I'm all right. Like things are going to be okay. So just growing up with that kind of perspective, understanding that like a lot of people have it a lot worse than you and that you have an opportunity here in an environment that's safe, that's clean. You know, a lot of people don't like I don't want to put a downer on this podcast, but a lot of people don't realize that people have it really rough in other parts of the world where they literally have to worry about bombs falling on their head, and and they're in serious situations where like their own safety is in risk. Most of us in the West grow up and live a life where we never question our safety. You never worry about something horrible happening to my family, you know? So just growing up with that kind of perspective, understanding it could be a whole lot worse, understanding that, you know, I have an opportunity here in the US to do something growing up in my family. And just also my parents, they migrated when they were in their 20s. So they acclimated very quickly and they assimilated in the US culture. But at the same time, you know, we're very much into our own culture, Egyptian culture and Arabic, and we learned at home and all that kind of stuff. So when you're growing up in the environment, you learn to kind of live two types of people, two types of personalities, understanding that, hey, sometimes you got to be, you know, the good Egyptian boy in the Egyptian culture, and sometimes you have to, you know, be the, you know, outgoing American young man that's in school, that kind of thing. So that's very handy when you're growing up, where you're in different situations and you have to adapt.
Got it. Yeah, I can see that. And was that a conscious switch for you? Like, I'm going to put on this role, I'm going to put on that role. And sometimes if you're in American context, you put on the Egyptian personality because it's really advantageous in that situation. Is that kind of like that?
Yeah, you're more aware of it when you get older because you start seeing patterns and things like that. Okay, this works kind of with my aunties, but, you know, at school, nobody knows what pita bread is. So I'm not going to be mentioning pita bread.
Right. You know? Yeah, yeah. I had, when I was in high school, I changed high schools between the first and the second year. And I took that as an opportunity to deliberately reinvent myself, right? I didn't like how I was being perceived. I didn't like the role I was playing at the old school, moved to the new school, and just, I got to play a completely different role. It was very powerful. Tell me about, and now you live in Australia, right? And so, new environment. Totally. Right? So you've lived on three different continents. Are you? No, you haven't really lived in Egypt, but you have family there. You visit. You have culture there, right?
Yeah, and I spent a good amount of time living in Dubai as well. So that was a totally different experience as well. Different culture, different language, different everything, and it's just So I kind of enjoy being an expat. I enjoy learning different cultures. Even if Australian culture is not as different as American culture, but you grow as a person. And what I realize is when I go back home to visit family or things like that, you know, things don't change much back home because they're in the same environment they grew up all their life and they never really kind of challenge themselves. And I feel like I've grown a lot. So they always tell me, oh, you've changed, you've grown, you're different. And I was just like, oh, really? Like, and it's
you're
just
like,
because
you should
I
try
put myself
it.
A different,
it's kind of cool.
Get out.
Yeah. So what was your sort of big turning point in order to become who you are today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if there was one turning point, but growing up, I was very close to my mother. My mother really gave me some really solid advice. She was a very tough woman. I don't even remember ever seeing my mom cry, which sounds strange, but she had to be tough. You know, she had to raise three kids with, you know, my dad was around, of course, but he was working all day. Like, I don't think I formally met my dad until I was 18 or something like that, because he's working, you know, 7 days a week. Yeah. You know, trying to make ends meet for our family and make sure that we have the education we need and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, some of the advice that I always remember from my mom growing up, and it really has helped me even till today, you know, because business is up and down roller coaster, is that, you know, you should always expect things to go wrong. Don't, and it's not a pessimistic way of looking at things. It's kind of a way of saying, like, if you're not caught by surprise, then often when we think bad things happen and we're caught by surprise, we act really emotionally. We react. We get stressed out. We often start scrambling. But if you kind of expect and understand that, hey, everybody goes through problems, it's never going to be always great. You know, you got to have ups and downs. So when the downs do come, you're kind of like, okay, this is normal. You're not beating yourself up, and you're able to kind of just calmly take care of the situation and try to.
So it's like emotionally preparing for difficulties.
Yeah. You know, like I remember when I loved basketball growing up. It was my favorite sport. I still love basketball. I still play recreationally. But I got cut from my freshman team. I didn't make my freshman team, and I was so disappointed because I really wanted to play basketball at the high school level. You know, my first year in high school, and you know, my mother just told me, you know, hey, you just got to get better. You know, just try to practice, things like that. You know, she didn't blame the coach blame, you know, go and write a letter to the school or something like that. No, she's just like, you're not good enough. You know, you gotta get better. And that kind of stuck to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No trophies for not making the cut. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of that. Let's just be honest. Like, I mean, yeah, this is a competition and you either make the cut or you don't. Right. And, it's how it is. And it's okay to feel bad about it and then back up on the horse and work harder.
Yeah. One of the things I found very helpful for me, especially in entrepreneurship and just managing a business, is reading biographies. Like just reading, like for example, just what is a biography that I absolutely love? Oh, Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, right?
Yeah.
That's just one example. Or if you read like, you know, Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson or things like that, right? The thing that you read, the pattern you see every time you read a biography of anybody that has done anything of any significance is that this is hard. Like they go through hell. Like it's really, really hard. And they go through a lot of pain, a lot of situations where like, you know, most people would have given up already. Mm-hmm. And it begs the question as you're reading it, are you willing to deal with that? What are you willing to put up with in order to get that kind of success? And of course there's levels and there's shades of gray and all that kind of stuff. But the point here is a lot of people, they see these successful people and they think, oh, you know, they must be brilliant. They must be smart. They must be lucky. But the truth of the matter is they go through a lot of grind for 20 plus years before they even see any success, which to me is a great way to kind of get perspective.
Yeah. Something I loved about Shoe Dog too is how he talks about it. It seems like he trusts himself and his intuition about things a lot, right? He's like, no, this feels right. And that we need to stay at the course or go this way. And that plays a big role. And also at the end where he's like, now they're a huge company and very successful. And if he could, he would go over and live the hard times again.
Right. Yeah.
Everything that was painful about it, he would love to be able to live that over again. Isn't that interesting?
Right. It is, but I actually think it's relatable. Like, you know, right. I look back, I mean, I'm not looking back at after succeeding at that level, but if I even just look back at when I didn't, you know, have, you know, maybe a comfortable lifestyle, you know, I reminisce with Nicole, my wife, sometimes is like, oh, I remember those days when like, you know, we would go and get a, you know, 50 cents chips from the corner store and whatever, get a little like taco from the taco stand. And that was kind of like a fun night out, you know, like it wasn't, mm-hmm. and it was simple. And yeah, and we were just trying to make ends meet and trying to, you know, we were struggling at the time, trying to build something. But there's a sweetness to the struggle. There's a sweetness to the simplicity of it.
Yeah. And like that when you're in that moment and you're just, you can't wait for it to be over, right? Just, it's good to remind yourself, no, you're like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or just like a month from now, you're going to look back and wish that you could be back in that moment when it was tough and it was a struggle. I went through a divorce in 2011, and that was a like very painful moment. 3 months of intense pain. I have two kids with my ex-wife. I live in New York. They live in Denmark and Copenhagen still. They're 12 and 14 now. Back then they were 3 and 6, like very young and super painful. I'd walk down the street and just burst into tears crying. And it was like very, so raw. And I was like, oh my God, this is like intense, right? This is like so much feeling. And after like one day it was kind of gone and I was back to normal. And I was like, damn it, if I'd known that it would pass like this, I would have savored it more, right? I would have enjoyed it more. And I did enjoy it to some extent, but just that rawness and that aliveness, we don't get to feel that too often, right?
Some a lot of change really happens beautiful. In those moments, yeah.
Yeah.
We can feel life, right? It's so easy to get into the rut of life and just like you get up and you do the thing, blah, blah, blah. And like, what are you really feeling, right? Do you really feel alive here?
Yeah, yeah. That's true. And understanding like is what I'm going through right now really that special? Like sometimes we feel like, oh, this is like happening only to me. It's probably happening to, you know, millions of people at the same exact moment.
Right. Yeah. 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 So what are you most proud of having created in your business or your life?
That's a really good question. You know, for me, if I retired right now, or if I fast forward to like when I'm in my rocking chair at 80, I'd probably be most proud of the fact that, yes, you know, I had a successful business. Yes, I, you know, helped people with my podcast. But I think the thing that I'm most proud of is...
And your podcast is super popular, right?
Yeah, which I've been really fortunate to be able to do and just be consistent with. But I think the impact is beyond just like, okay, you made some money and you're able to kind of grow a team and all that kind of stuff. For me, me and the team understand that, yes, we're a webinar software, but we enable people to be able to sell the products, be able to put food on the table, be able to, you know, grow their business, maybe even just like discover something new for themselves that they maybe want to get into, maybe, you know, follow a passion, things like that. And to be able to kind of break down the barrier of technology and allow people to connect with their audience and grow with their audience through webinars. You know, I know that sounds kind of geeky, but we get tons of emails, people saying like, thank you so much. You make it so much easier for us to do this. And it'd be really hard to do this without your software. So for me, that's kind of the biggest thing. It's just being able to empower people that aren't able to code, unable to like put these pieces together. You know, people that I know, like people, my mom and my sisters and all that, they're at that level of technology where they're just like looking for a button to press. But so for me, that's kind of my biggest accomplishment, is just being able to help people do what they love for a living. So that's been great.
That's amazing. We've looked a lot at different webinar softwares, and most of it, honestly, this is just my personal opinion, is crap. And I really love what you guys have done with Webinar Ninja. So I really appreciate that. Yeah, it's really good. Something that fascinates me too is this, you know, a lot of people are sort of into, you know, giving back, right? There's like my business and here I make money and then I give back. And there's nothing wrong with like obviously giving in any context anywhere. But one of the things that I love the most is when your actual product and service or service that you make money from is your giving, right?
Yeah. That is something that really opens up people's world.
I have a very controversial take on that. Like I get in a lot of arguments about. So
let me hear that.
You know, so a lot of people, it bothers me when I see people criticize entrepreneurs online, or they call them greedy. You know, of course greed exists. Of course there's people that are making, you know, a lot of money, more money than we can imagine, and maybe not paying their fair share of taxes, all that kind of stuff. But I'll just give an example. Like somebody on Facebook could say, you know, like, oh, doesn't matter if, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is giving 90% of his wealth or whatever it is to the, you know, when he dies to non-for-profits or charities. You know, he's so wealthy and this guy is so greedy, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So like, my perspective is that as an entrepreneur, period, if you're an entrepreneur and you're employing people, you are already, in my book, a philanthropist already. Mm-hmm. Because the majority of people in the world, they go to work every day and they do honest work, which is great, and they get paid, mm-hmm. but they don't help anybody else in terms of putting food on the table. They don't actually mm-hmm. employ anybody. They don't actually mm-hmm. get anybody a way to pay for bills. So for any entrepreneur, whether it's a corner store or a cafe or a company that employs 500 employees or whatever it is, that's 500 families are able to, you know, go to karate class and, you know, go to vacations and things like that, because this person, somebody started this business, created this opportunity, created these jobs, and employed these people. Like, that's incredible. Like, most people can't say that. That's crazy. Absolutely. Amazing to me. And that's one of the joys of being an entrepreneur, is being able to see what your business, your creation, has been able to fuel for other people. And so I'm if you're an entrepreneur, in my book, you're already doing philanthropy. Like, of mm-hmm. course, it's great to always give more than that if you have surplus cash, of course. But I just think that sometimes people don't have that perspective. They think, oh, they're just making all this money and, you know, look at me, I'm not making that much money.
No, I'm with you 100%. Creating a business is available to any one of us, right? Like if one of these workers is unhappy that they're not getting paid enough, like you can start your own business. You can do your own thing, whether, you know, it's like a simple online thing or bigger business employing a bunch of people. Everybody has that available to them at some level. Like everybody, you know what I'm saying, right? Like if you're literally can't see and hear and talk and it's something you probably can't, but. And also, like, people these days love to hate on Jeff Bezos, you know, for Amazon. And I'm like, I don't know the details of his business practices, but I do know that he's made it way easier and cheaper to get a lot of goods. And that has a lot of value for society as a whole, right? Yeah. It's so much easier to get all the stuff that you need. You save time, you save money. And like, what is the, you know, what is the total value of that to society? It's pretty big. It's pretty big. Yeah. And he gets paid for that. He captures a big part of this, you know, a share of that. And that's totally fair.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. We agree.
I mean, it's a tough one because a lot of people, if you've never started a business, it's really hard for you to understand. It's like somebody who's never had kids or somebody who's never had been in a relationship or something like that. Like, you just don't understand the inner workings of what it takes to be successful. A lot of people are like here's another concept that I disagree with. A lot of people are like, you know, some businesses, they grow too big. You know, like, when is it enough? You know, like, that's just not how business works. Like, you're either growing or you're dying. Like, you can't just like, okay, I'm going to shut off the valve now, no more customers. You know, like, you either continue to grow and you get that wheel going so that you can continue to expand, you can continue to employ people, and you can continue to give more value in the marketplace, or you are being eaten by your competition. And that's just, there's no stasis, you know, there's no staying the same.
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, totally. And the only caveat I'd say to that is, you know, the too big to fail when the government and the taxpayers end up bailing you out. I think that's generally something that we shouldn't do, right? If you mismanage your company, then the company should fail. That's part of being an entrepreneur. You take a risk and your company may fail, and then someone else can build a company and hopefully do better, right?
Yeah. Or you try again and learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. We all make them.
Yeah. It's like people confuse the like profits as like, oh, you're making all this profit. Well, then what if we just had socialism and there was no profit? And they forget the negative profits, right? All the times that companies lose money, because that's what it is. You're taking a risk and you don't always win, right? Sometimes you lose a lot.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So talk to me about like about politics, because it seems like you have some opinions there. Like, what is your what is your take on it? Where do you stand? Has it changed over time?
You know, I mean, I don't really get too much into the weeds of politics, just because I believe that I have more influence over the way my life will be led or be lived, more than politicians or who's in office. Of course, they have influence. Of course, there's always things that you can learn from them. And I think that's probably more what I would really get out of politics, is more like a good leader that you can learn from. Anybody who's been employed before, they understand that it's really hard to enjoy your job if you don't respect your manager, if you don't feel like you're learning or growing from them. And I think that the same is true for a lot of people when it comes to their leader, wherever they are in their country. They want to be able to feel like they respect them. They can learn from them. They don't have to agree with them all the time. Of course, no one's going to agree with everybody. You don't agree with your own spouse that you don't even agree
with yourself a month ago, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's true. So as long as you feel that sense of respect and sense of like that you're learning something from that person, I feel like that's what I get out of politics. And, you know, whether it's at the local level or it's at the national or global level, you know, that's just what my take on it. But personally, I just, you know, we've been through a lot of, in the U.S., we've been through so many presidents in the last 20 years or whatever it is, you know, so for me, it's just like, it doesn't really have a major effect. You have to adapt as an entrepreneur. You have to learn what's working now, won't always work tomorrow, that kind of thing. So for me, that's kind of where I stand.
Mm. No, it's true. It doesn't, like, people get all sort of up in arms about it and all emotional about it, but the reality, like the real day-to-day effect, is generally fairly limited. Shifting gears here, I want to get back to sort of the core theme of this podcast about like your inner fire and like where that drive is coming from. What are some of the struggles that you've been through in your journey to like find out who you are and have the life that you have now?
Yeah. So for those who kind of follow my work, I was a teacher for 13 years. I was a high school and then university teacher for 13 years. I was a teacher trainer. I was a, you know, head of department at the university before I left. And I made a huge transition in my career into becoming a full-time entrepreneur. It was huge, but it wasn't sudden. Like, I actually built businesses online for 10 years before I made that switch and all that kind of stuff, and learned the hard way, made some mistakes while I was still making a salary, which is something I highly recommend for somebody who wants to get started.
You're cheating.
Yeah. Well, I had a safety net, which was good, you know, you know, one of the things about building a business on the side while you're working is that, you know, part-time efforts give you part-time results. So it's hard to always kind of, at some point you're going to have to make that leap, but.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause for me, it's always been, and I think your strategy is smart. It's just never, ever worked for me.
No,
I've always been
been
with both
limitation.
Feet and then like sink or swim.
It has its limitations for sure. I would equate it to having like a part-time job. Like you're going to get part-time results. And that's kind of what I experienced. But one of the struggles I had was just the struggle of identity of like, you know, I dedicated my life for 13 years. And even before that with my degree and all that stuff in education, to being a teacher and being a fantastic, and I was great. You know, I was really good at my job and I got promotions at a
teaching?
Very young age. I was teaching English as a second language. So I would teach immigrants that would come in and try to have to learn English to the level so they can be able to take their subjects in English. And then I quickly moved up to management and things like that. So like at 25 years old, I was managing teachers twice my age and, you know, I had to kind of grow up fast and to say to myself, you know, throw that all away and start a full-time business and leave the career altogether and everything I invested, the whole sunk cost fallacy kind of kicks in and you kind of realize, well, is this a mistake? Am I doing the right thing here? Is this a huge risk? Also, like, who am I now? I'm not a teacher anymore. Like, it's a big part of who you are.
So I know the concept of sunk cost, but walk me through how that plays out here.
Well, you feel like I invested so much money and time and an effort building out my career, my connections, my network in teaching and education. Even if you just like you have this feeling, even if you want to change jobs, like you work at an institution, everybody knows who Omar is and what he's capable of. And everybody likes you and you've already built your relationships and you know how to deal with the people that are difficult already and all that kind of stuff. Just moving out of that and then moving the whole career. I got to retool totally. Like no one knows who Omar is in entrepreneurship or business or online or anything like that. And I got to reestablish my name, which took years to do that in education. Mm-hmm. So all that kind of stuff was tough. But the moment that kind of forced me to make that transition was, you know, I was in the university I was working at. I was the head of department, but the chair of the department left and I was doing his job. I was acting chair for about a year and a half. And I was doing a fantastic job. My team was a well-oiled machine, everything like that. But I was like, well, a year and a half in an acting role is very long. Like you should be, you know, appointed the position within 6 months or something like that, maximum. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got frustrated. I was like, what's going on here? Why am I not getting this position? You know, I'm not getting paid for it. You know, the difference of pay and I'm not getting the recognition or I can't actually put it on my CV. So I had a meeting with my supervisor, the dean of the university. I said, hey, you know, can we sit down and have a chat? She said, sure, I had this chat. And I just said, hey, can you just level with me? What's going on here? I've been doing this job for a year and a half. When am I going to get this job, you know, permanently? Like it's going to be official. And I saw her face and I saw her for a moment. She was going to kind of like sweet talk me for a bit, but she quickly realized like, hey, I just can't keep dragging this person along. And she just leveled with me and she said, you know, I know, you know, on authority that the director of the university wants to make an outside hire for this position. And at that moment, I realized, man, I can work as hard as I want. I can do everything right. And I still don't have the power to navigate my future. Mm-hmm. Somebody can make a decision to hire.
What a blessing, man. What a blessing to the world that happened.
And now I see it as a blessing. Right. At the moment, I was just so frustrated and angry. And a lot of people ask me like, weren't you scared to jump into entrepreneurship? And I said, at that moment, my frustration outgrew my fear. I really was so frustrated to the point. Yeah. And I just said, you know, if I work as hard as I do.
So frustration is anger, right? So it's like, you're so angry with the situation that you're like, fuck that it's scary. Like, you know, the anger helped you blast through your fear. It's a powerful strategy.
I just felt like anything
right?
would be better than this. Like this feeling is so bad that even if I go out there and I fail, I fail on my own terms. And when you're that frustrated, you tend to have confidence. Like, you know, I can pull this off. I could do this, you know? And I just realized if I worked as hard as I do on what I do in my job, in my own business, I think I'll do all right. You know, and I'm not going to say it was, you know, rainbows and sunshine. From that point on, I had my own share of struggles transitioning to entrepreneurship. And, you know, one of the things I really did that really helped me in that transition is I totally lowered my expenses. Like I sold my car, I moved to a, you know, a really cheap apartment. I really just started to have very minimal needs to try to make sure that whatever runway I had would last as much as possible. And if all else fails, I need to make $1,500 a month and I'll be okay. You know,
right.
So that really helped.
That's amazing. Yeah, I had a year living in India, which was really helpful.
Oh, wow. Whereabouts in India?
It's cheap. In Mysore, South India.
Okay, I've never been to India. I would love to explore.
It was a fun experience. We ended up living there a year. But that really helped because it's a lot cheaper to live there than, say, in New York City. So
Yeah. I've been there. I used to live on McDougal Street. Yeah, Ryan Tupp and Mamoon's Falafel. We used to smell falafel all day long.
I could imagine. Yeah, I like going there. Yeah. Is it as good now as it was like 15, 20 years ago? You don't know.
Last time I was here, maybe 5 years ago, it was good. Yeah, the baklava is really nice too.
Yeah. I came there in like 1999, 2000 time. It was, yeah, good times back then. I wanted to dive into like the identity piece a little bit more, like changing identity from being a teacher and being in that environment to seeing yourself as an entrepreneur. Like what was difficult about that, or how did that feel inside of you?
It felt like I was going into war with no like armor and no weapons, nothing. Like I'm totally naked. Like I don't know what that even looks like. You know, I don't even like it's.
I think a lot of people feel that way. Did you feel like you had to pretend, or were you just like,
oh yeah,
guys,
totally.
I'm naked. Yeah.
I felt like the problem I had is I really didn't have any examples. Like I've never met a successful, publicly known Egyptian American entrepreneur. I don't know what that looks like, you know. Hmm. So I don't have an example. You know,
was that important to you, like the heritage, that in the ethnicity, for example?
It's not the heritage. It's just it's really important, I believe, in human nature to see that it's possible, to see an example of something that you can recognize and be like, oh, okay, so it is possible for, you know, somebody like me to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. I quickly got over that because I realized, you know, there's nothing that's stopping me from being successful other than myself. One of the things I really
You realize that?
Actually, it was a failed podcast. So I actually started a podcast that failed miserably. It was a podcast called People Who Know Their Shit. And it was interview podcast where I interviewed people. And we had some success. Somehow I finagled to get Gary Vaynerchuk on my show somehow on a phone call. But on a successful day, you know, it wasn't really doing as well as I wanted to. You know, for me, I wanted to have a larger following, a larger audience. I wanted the podcast to be like where I started to grow my audience and build my business off that. I think the most successful episode we ever had was like 400 downloads in total, not even on the day of debut. And what I realized, it was funny because Nicole, my partner in life and my partner in business, we did a cross country trip from San Diego to New York, and we drove because we had a bunch of equipment. Nicole was doing some videography work at the time, and we had to do a gig, and we had all this equipment with us, and we're like, we had some time, so we just had the open road, and we're thinking, why is this not working? Why is the podcast, you know, absolute shit? You know, why are we not doing well? And it just dawned upon me in somewhere around Oklahoma or something like that, where it's just like, you know, I'm not good at interviewing. This is not my wheelhouse. You know, I'm not good at that. What am I good at? I'm actually really good at teaching. I taught for 13 years. I've, you know, five times a day. People don't realize teachers teach five classes every single day, or I like to call it, we used to do five matinees a day because you're basically performing, right? Mm-hmm. Every single day for 13 years. And I realized, oh my God, like, and I used to get annoyed when I used to listen to other people's podcasts that I used to teach or used to watch online courses. Like, man, this person doesn't know how to teach. What are you talking about? Like, this is not how you're supposed to, you know, check for comprehension or make sure that people are eliciting great questions and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, what can I do to use my superpower? I have a leg up on some other people on this in the podcast world being a teacher. And, you know, Nicole is a big fan of Coffee Break French and Coffee Break Spanish, which is a language learning podcast. It's a daily podcast. And she said, you know, that'd be cool if like you did something like that, but with business. And I said, oh, that's a good idea. Maybe we can do daily business lessons, just short 10-minute business lessons, something very specific like how to hire your first employee or something like that. And we do it every single day and see how it goes. And for me, that was kind of the moment where I stopped denying my past. I stopped denying that, hey, I am a teacher. I am. This is my skill. This is who I am. But now I'm just going to use it in entrepreneurship. Now I'm going to use it to sell. I'm going to use it to promote. I'm going to use it to build my podcast. And then when we launched the podcast, immediately the results were there, because it's such a different type of podcast. People, you know, most people are not used to learning business lessons, and it's short. And it was 2014 when we launched, like 6 years ago. But for me, that was kind of like the aha moment. Like, I don't need to throw away my past in order to be successful in the future.
That's a super powerful lesson. I see a lot that a lot, and I've done it myself, where you like, oh, I want to do that more. Like, this is the new shiny object and I want to do that, right? And the success always comes from building on the success you already have. That's the way to do it. And, you know, we do software, Simplero software for coaches and teachers and trainers and so on. Speakers and authors and all that. And like, I see people who jump into coaching and then they come from a background as a nurse. And I'm like, well, maybe bring that into it, right? And like, work with nurses, or like bring your experience from being a nurse into your coaching business. It's always way more powerful. But so what I'm hearing you say is that your identity went from being a teacher to being, oh, I think I need to be an entrepreneur, to like, oh, how about them both and put them together? Is that kind of?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And understanding that my advantage is my experience. My advantage is like, it's quite unique to have somebody to come from the teaching background, you know, and I was a teacher trainer as well. So I actually specialize in classroom management, which works perfectly, because there is a sense of classroom management that you need to do on a webinar, like being able to set some guidelines and tell them how to ask questions and make sure you're interacting in the chat and make sure you're manning the kind of the room. And all that kind of stuff comes into play from my teaching days, which is these principles are timeless. So it really has helped me.
Oh, that's awesome. So who are your mentors today?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Well, you know, we both work with Dan from SaaS Academy. So I'll reach out from time to time if I need some advice on our business, especially when it comes to, you know, growing and scaling and things like that. He has a lot of experience with that.
Dan Martin,
One of my favorite people in this world is a man named Michael Port. Michael Port is he's an author, New York Times bestseller, but he's also the co-founder of an organization called Heroic Public Speaking. He's one of the best. Him and his wife, Amy Port, they're one of the best public speaking coaches I've ever met. And I got the privilege to work with them and get to know them, and they're close friends. But he's always really been there for me, just to be a sounding board, to kind of give me a different perspective. You know, he's about 5 or 6 years older than me and has seen a lot of success in his business. He's done business consulting. He has a great book, a Wall Street Journal bestseller called Book Yourself Solid. So he's always kind of has a nice little kind of way to, I'll get on a call with him and he'll be like, you know what, try this, try that. What, like, you know, have you thought about this? And in a positive way, because he comes from actually an acting background. He used to be an actor, and that's why he teaches public speaking, because he infuses improv and things like that into public speaking. And he has that culture of yes and, of like, okay, that's a great idea, but what about this too?
Have you done improv? This?
I've did a bit, yeah, with my speaking, public speaking training and things like that. It's a lot of fun, and it always, it's a reflection of life, really, because like you have to kind of think on your feet all the time.
Right. Yeah, I did some I did some improv here classes here in New York when I first moved here. It was it was fun.
That's fun. Yeah, it's a lot of good stuff.
How did that relationship build with Michael?
That's a great question. So Michael, so I always saw Michael as just like this really successful, you know, famous person, right? You know, he was actually a real actor. Like, he was in The Pelican Brief, and he was in Sex and the City, a regular person on Sex and the City, and things like that. And I was like, and then he started his business and a consulting company, and he's a great author. Then he started Whole Book Speaking, all that kind of stuff. One time, a friend of mine named John Corcoran. John Corcoran is one of those friends of yours that's really connected, knows everybody, right? And he just sent out a message and said, hey, Michael Port is doing a creative live up in San Francisco on public speaking, and they need some people in the audience to be students and participate. It's going to take 3 or 4 days. at the time, you know, Nicole and I had some free time. We're like, hey, let's give this a try. You know, we need to improve our public speaking. You know, we want to get on more stages, things like that. So we were living in San Diego at the time, and we drove up to San Francisco, and we took the class. We were one of the students, but John also lived in San Francisco, and he invited me to dinner with Michael Port, and we had dinner. We had sushi that night, and you know, we just talked, and you know, I was quite quiet in the dinner, but you know, we just kind of got along. And then another time after that, like maybe a few months after that, a mutual friend of Michael's and I invited me to have dinner in LA. We had dinner, and then that's when we kind of got to know each other on that dinner. We talked a little bit. He asked me what I was doing and the software I was building. He talked about his work, and I was, you know, told him how much his work influenced me. And he never kind of treated me like we weren't equals. He was treated me like he had something to learn from me, and he found me interesting. And I immediately, you know, felt that from him. And there was just a moment in the conversation where we're like towards the end of the night, and he's like, you know, Omar, I really like you. Like, how can I help you out? And I was like, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. It's like, I just said, hey, I have this software called Webinar Ninja. You know, would you love to like give it a try? Maybe you think it'd be good for your audience. And he's like, how about we do a webinar together? And I invite my audience, and we do something together for my audience, and they can see the software in action, and maybe they can sign up. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, like, that's awesome. We have an affiliate program if you want. He's like, no, I don't do this for affiliate program. Like, I don't need the commission. Not I don't need, but I don't really want the commission. I just want to help you out because you seem like a good person. And I just never kind of met somebody who's just genuinely that generous and that successful. And probably they work hand in hand. And then we ran that webinar, and it kind of helped me get the software off the ground. And really, he just really was supportive at the time. When I really needed it, you know, when I really needed it, and he was just super kind to me. I've never seen him being any less generous every single time I speak to him. So he's been a fantastic friend and a mentor.
That's amazing. That's amazing. What's the best sort of piece of advice that he's given you?
Oh boy. He's given me a lot of advice. One of them that I feel... So he's very protective of his own life, his own family. When I say protective, I mean like he understands that that's important. I need to make sure that I covet my family. I spend time with them. I spend time for myself. I make time for reading. I make time for just getting enough sleep, all that kind of stuff. And that no business is worth you sacrificing those things. You need to balance those things. You need to understand that, yes, you want to be successful, but you can be successful in 2 years instead of 9 months, you know, and try to have a more enjoyable 2 years and have a more balanced and healthy 2 years. One of the things that he's taught me is just how important health is. Like, you know, you don't want to work and get to a point where you can't even enjoy what you've worked for. And that's something that's really hard to see when you're younger. You know, now that I'm 40, I realize every day that, you know, yesterday is always going to feel better than tomorrow. You know, those knees and those aches and all that stuff. But, you know, luckily I'm in good shape right now, but you want to kind of maintain that. And if you don't do that, if you don't make it a priority, unfortunately it's going to suffer. You're going to suffer in the long run.
Yeah. All right. This has been, I've really loved this conversation. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up. I've got sort of two final questions. One is, where can people follow you, stay in touch? Webinarninja.com, obviously. Go there, check it out. Use that webinar software. What else?
Yeah, so I'm not a big social media guy. Like, I'm on social. I have profiles. I don't know why. It's just not something that I just don't have time for it, or maybe I just feel like it's a rat race to constantly be posting and all that kind of stuff. But the one that I do frequent the most is Twitter. So if you ever want to check me out or follow me, it's the Omar Zinholm on Twitter.
Great. And then what is the number one thing that you want to leave people with to remember, take away from this conversation?
I always feel like whatever you're trying to do in life, whether it's your career, whether it's business, whether it's family, being a good dad, being a good brother, have a long-term approach. Like, it's very easy to be hard on yourself if you feel like you need to be perfect right away. And no one's perfect. No one's going to get to perfection. we strive for that, but we try our best to just, you know, understand that as long as we're getting better little by little every day, if I can look back and say I'm proud of my progression, that's all you really need to worry about. A lot of us, we don't look backwards. We always kind of just look forward, and tomorrow, we don't really like look back and say, oh man, maybe I need to be thankful and pat myself on the back and say, hey, I did some pretty cool things in life, you know. Mm-hmm. So have a long-term approach, and don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Omar. This is really, really insightful, enlightening. I learned something. I took a lot away from this conversation. I really appreciate you showing up here early morning for this.
Thanks, Calvin. I really appreciate it. It was fun chatting.
Thank you for listening to the podcast episode. After 20 years as a serial entrepreneur, it's my passion to bring you ideas and insights from some of the best entrepreneurs, leaders, and thinkers in the world straight to your phone. We're going to be launching many, many more podcast episodes in the future, so please subscribe and leave a 5-star review if you found any value at all from today's conversation. Your reviews and feedback mean the world to me.